for listening to The Best of Broadway. We've been listening to Camelot. This is Joe, your host, saying thank you for listening. See you next time.
Each evening from December to December, before you drift to sleep upon your cot, think back on all the tales that you remember of Camelot. Ask every person if he's heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if he has not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot.
Camelot, Camelot, I know it gives a person pause, but in Camelot, Camelot, those were the legal laws.
Where once it never rained till after sundown, by 8 a.m. the morning fog had flown. Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Yes, we do. And this is another edition, the Black Friday edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. And, you know, on the Black Friday edition, Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director, is here with us today. Dennis, you know, our special Black Friday sale is the same thing as all the time. All the local news and views for free.
That's right.
You just have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
And listening, I know in a lot of cases, is for most people, they're very passive about it. But I think that we engage the listener. And I'd like to think that as soon as we make a statement, that people are double-checking to make sure.
Yeah, they're getting mad.
Homework.
No, they're not necessarily. But they're,
make sure we're being honest.
Yeah, yeah. For example, one of our favorite populists, and we'll be featuring some of his commentaries again on this show, Jim Hightower out of Austin, Texas. He always is, you know, his basic slogan is upset, then you should agitate. Agitate means let your opinion be known and let's change things.
Yep.
Doesn't mean cause a lot of upset for anybody, but it just means that let's change things for the better. Let's get people together and organize. So in any event, we have a lot of stories today, not necessarily from the papers, but a lot of things are always happening in the world, and we're trying to update you on those. Looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, that is November 18th. Today is November the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Keep that in perspective here. If you're listening to the podcast, which you can, of course, listen to anytime from WHFR.FM, click on Talk Shows, WHFR Journal, and pick a date. Dearborn schools are still gaining students. Population increase. And what do you think, Dennis? Having more babies locally?
No, I mean, this is... not a huge surprise. I mean, we know that things like this do work in cycles, and so often they'll have schools. And I grew up in Livonia, as you know, and when I was in school, we had four Class A high schools. Jay, what would Class A be? Over 2,000 students?
Yeah, I guess. I went to a Class B, though, so I...
Okay. Well, we had four Class A's in one city, and then 4 years later, they're closing one of them, and now they're talking about there's enough people coming back, they may have to reopen. So, yeah, no, this stuff works in cycles. It doesn't surprise me.
Well, I think there might also be more if there are students, and it doesn't say here in the story.
Regarding...
And it could. Well, do some of those students come from other districts? Are they allowed to change, you know, districts? There is a way that you can do that. If you don't like the schools, the public schools in your area, you can send them to public schools in the next city or two if you can at
least
drive them there.
Dearborn has school of choice to a degree, meaning that if you live in East Dearborn but you want your child to go to, say, Bryant Middle School, you can work that out if you do it enough ahead of time.
Right. Well, I have a follow-up story we have to do immediately next on that, because Governor Snyder has made some initiatives, if you will, movements towards implementing, now that the Republicans are back again in power in the legislature. They can pass anything they want to. And, of course, with a Republican governor, a lot of the things they want to pass, he'll probably agree with. He has started a very, very dangerous initiative. And so I have a commentary from Gretchen Whitmer, who is the majority leader of the Democrats that are left in the Senate of the state of Michigan.
Is it an education initiative?
Yes.
I remember reading about that last year.
Yeah.
Very
and,
significant.
It's something that actually WDET Craig Folley on his show earlier this week, both Monday and Tuesday, he covered these. There was two related issues, but it looks like there's going to be a big push towards it, and it could be very definitely a horrible threat. Well, but back to Dearborn, Brian Winston, it was mentioned in the same board meeting a week ago last Monday, that he's the superintendent. He said he will be working with the board to make $2 million to $4 million in mid-year budget cuts. What that means is, not for next year, that's for this year.
They've done this before in the
mid-year. How can they cut in the middle of a year? What is left to cut? What can they do? I can understand, and I mean, I can understand in a new budget year, you have budget cuts. That usually means laying off people. We can't afford, in my humble opinion, to lay off any more teachers. But especially since we just mentioned Dearborn is still gaining students.
Right.
That means the classes are still getting bigger.
Right.
And there's more need for more teachers if we're going to keep the same teacher-student ratio. But he says those budget cuts will be announced in January.
Now, I remember a couple of years ago when this exact situation happened, maybe a year and a half ago, and the way he had approached it at the time was we wanted to maintain some flexibility. In other words, we are doing things right now. We want to be able to look at the situation again in, let's say, January or February and be able to react that way.
Yeah.
So that's why there were mid-year cuts, is based on how effective the initial cuts were.
Sometimes they have to do it because all of a sudden the state of Michigan tells them, we're going to stop giving you these payments for a while. We're short of money. That's not the case at this point anyway. So it's a danger. Well, let's take a look at those initiatives from the state area. And, of course, I have the email. For some reason, I get weekly emails from Gretchen Whitmer. Isn't that interesting?
Really?
Yeah, it's nothing personal. I never met her, but she is a state Democratic leader, what's left of the Democrats in the state of Michigan. She says a lot of things. Let me just see.
There's a huge information about this on MLive.
MLive.com. Yeah, okay. Well, she has an intro, but anyway, let's not worry about that. The Democrats do have a plan. They're called Michigan 2020 Plan, and there's all kinds of things that they want to do to improve education in the state of Michigan. And it can't happen. It just simply can't happen, whether it's a good idea or not. The Republicans in the state will just not let it happen. They're philosophically opposed, but also just politically opposed to anything Democrats would want. And why should they even listen? Why should they even try to listen if they're in the majority? Now, that's really a bad deal. I mean, that's not what democracy is all about. John Stuart Mill talked about the marketplace of ideas. That's what a good society should be. He pointed out that minority opinions are often very good, but unless they can be heard and discussed in that marketplace of ideas, you never can find them. Never confine the better idea. And you have to be open-minded to believe that maybe what you have is not the best, that there could be something better. And you know, in politics, partisan politics, as they're called in the last couple of years at the federal and the state level, the majorities don't want to listen at all. They really don't want to listen. They want to compromise, but they don't even want to listen. That they will cut off debate in the committees. And George DeRaney, our representative, told us about this happening, is that even though he's on the Education Committee, he raises his hand to speak, they won't even recognize him. Because what could he say? Nothing that would change their minds, because they've got their minds already made, and so why waste time even if he has a better idea?
That's exactly right.
You know, it's crazy.
Some of the best ideas I heard came out of the third parties in this past election.
Yeah.
They got no exposure because they weren't one of the big two.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the leaders in both the Republican and Democratic parties don't want to try something new because that could upset their not only their party but the voters, and they could lose votes.
Okay, here's the story from Gretchen Whitmer, Senator, Michigan Senator. Senator from Michigan. What district? Is she outside of Lansing? I can't remember what district she represents, but nonetheless.
She doesn't send me emails, so I don't know.
Okay. Yesterday, she says, and this she's referring to this last Monday, Governor Snyder released the latest and most offensive step in his anti-education agenda in the form of a proposed overhaul of Michigan school aid funding. The deeply flawed plan would end public education as we know it in Michigan by enacting nearly the same voucher system that Michigan voters overwhelmingly rejected in 2000. Anybody remember 12 years ago? The whole issue was out there. Collectively, we said no. She goes on to say, and of course, all opinions on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. Just keep that in mind for the rest of the hour. She goes on to say it would create, this plan from Governor Snyder, fiscal uncertainty for every single school district in the state. That includes Dearborn. And only succeed in lining the pockets of the CEOs, that's chief executive officers, running for for-profit corporate schools. She says, it isn't a plan that looks forward. It's one that only looks back on the previous attempts by out-of-state interests to profit off of Michigan students. She says it's a plan that says the education of our children is better left to the corporate accountants at quote-unquote schools incorporated than it is with the teachers in our classrooms. It's nothing short of a disaster waiting to happen, and one that I find simply offensive as both a legislator and as a mother of two young girls. We can stop this plan, but only if we speak out together. The governor's proposal is already receiving a tremendous amount of criticism from educators, parents, and students from across the state, and we need to ensure that the message continues to be heard loud and clear. And the story was in the Detroit News November 20th. It's interesting, you know, he would announce this initiative right before a holiday week so that all the parade stories and Thanksgiving shopping stories will take precedence. It sneaks through, and then there's a lame duck session in December in which the Republicans still have a majority, of course, and they will in January too, but that's all going to be holiday news. So they can pass all these bills in December and... No, he can sign him into law. Whoop-de-doo. And there's almost no press coverage, no media coverage that way. And nobody's listening because people are out shopping or something or doing family things, which is fine. But, you know, so with nobody paying attention, we can make it all happen. And why? It's not to save our failing schools. I think it's to make more profits for certain corporate businesses. And as Gretchen Whitmer says, they're not necessarily even based in the state. At this point, we're not outsourcing our education to China,
right.
At least. I mean,
because it's
a little far to send them. But
yeah,
and the Chinese online instruction is a little difficult with all those characters, you know.
That's right. Involved. So explain this the proposal, though.
From the Detroit News, Michigan schools face overhaul. A plan to overhaul Michigan's public education funding came under sharp scrutiny Monday as educators saw the first glimpse. Michigan Public Education Finance Project proposes multiple revisions from how students are counted for state aid to allowing funding for each pupil to be shared by districts, depending on where a child takes courses. The proposal requested by Governor Snyder calls for expanding online learning and removing school district so-called ownership of students and letting them take their minimum $6,900 a year in state aid to other public schools. But critics said the plan will draw aid away from the neediest schools instead of adding resources to help them boost achievement. They said public schools will crumble as money flows to for-profit companies, which means if you're a senior in Dearborn, you can just choose yourself, or your family can choose, for you to take a number of online courses from God knows where instead of going to Dearborn schools, And if you, you know, if two of your five, 40% of your classes go to online, then 40% of that $6,900 does not go to Dearborn Public Schools. It goes to the online schools. And let me tell you, online can be done a lot less expensively. So those companies will make huge profits because they don't have the overhead. They don't have buildings. They don't have, you know, teachers can be like one teacher per monitoring these online classes per 100 or one per 500, depending on how good the programming and interactivity of the online course was. I have been trained, and I was on a management committee statewide for online instruction when it first began, actually 20 years ago. I know the pros and cons and the good and the bad of online instruction. And, you know, there's some very interesting trends. One is very positive. Get this, online but credited free college instruction. Yeah.
It's radical, isn't it?
There's a course in Introduction to Sociology out of MIT from one of the best instructors in the country. And right now, you know, there's a question of how do we give certification and how do we make it really college transferable. But totally free, the whole semester, 3 hours equivalent credit, and there's lectures and there's interactivity. And it's just a question of, is it totally accountable in the usual way that they count towards a college degree? How can they, the big question is, how can they make sure that a student isn't cheating online? And that's, but we have online instruction here at Henry Ford Community College, and it's well managed, and it's individually managed on campus. And there's always people here that you can come and visit if you have questions or problems with your online course. So I like that local control. But some of these online experiences that will pop up, and I think that's the cheapest way to do it, they're definitely not going to be able to receive that much local feedback.
I'm trying to remember in that article that you're talking about this proposal from the governor.
Yeah.
Was there ever anything in there that said that the participating school districts could choose not to? In other words, maybe a city like Dearborn says, no, we don't want to open our borders. We want that district ownership. Or would it be across the state, basically go wherever you want to go?
Yep.
Okay.
They can go wherever they want to go if it's adopted that way. It'll also encourage districts to offer more courses online themselves and reward them with more state aid for students who mastered the subject after testing. But, of course, they're already getting state aid per student, so they got to move into online instruction with new money from where? You know, I mean,
same money, it's right.
Once the students are taking the course, but you got to develop it. You got to train the teachers. You have to get the computer systems in place to handle online instruction. So in a way, you need new money and you need startup time for more online classes and research development, evaluation standards, people to constantly check entry level, exit levels, you know, to make them accountable.
But not only that, but for something like math where the answer is very, you know, it's very objective. Here, this is the answer. There's only one to something where I'm sure you've read essays, and that's very subjective, is it not? People have writing style differences. This is, you know, they may or may not include everything. So I'm just saying it's not as easy as just having one person per 500 students.
Plus, here, I mean, you know, if adopted, it means students from Detroit, and here's the old booga booga.
Well, yeah, but no, you're
for
right.
Dearborn, they could choose to take some or all of their classes in Dearborn if they could physically get here.
Sure.
And there's nothing to stop them.
No.
Nothing to stop, except there would be a capacity issue at some schools, but...
I think the people in Detroit getting a better education in Dearborn is a positive thing, but I think the people in Dearborn look at it as negative. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't think we have enough teachers per student for the students we have.
Exactly.
You know, first of all, but there's probably a few more empty chairs here and there. But the online thing and even the charter school possibilities, and they could transfer to charter schools too for the same amount of money. You know, as Vicky Markovich, who's superintendent of Oakland Schools, said, which is the county's intermediate school district, the proposal lacks a plan to have accountability follow the child. It fails to provide quality standards before opening the door to school operators and offers no transparency on how funding will be used.
Right.
And she says it's a truly radical experiment for Michigan to embark on. It's untried, unproven, and it's dangerous. When they talk about unbundling funding, they're talking about the dissolution of community schools.
What is your knock against it?
Oh, I agree. This is not the way to do it. I know online can be effective or more effective, but you have to really know what you're doing and work in it. And charter schools, I'm not personally against competition for the public schools, but let's have totally equal standards and equal accountability. And we can't just let anybody also set up a school without knowing what they're going to do and whether or not they have a proven track record, too, which this plan has none of these criteria at all. You know, a lot of these plans that come to the state of Michigan that are voted on as bills aren't even written in Michigan. Now, this one might have been because they say it comes from a group called the Michigan Public Education Finance Project.
Out of Rhode Island. No, I'm just kidding. But no, you don't know.
Well, but even that group could have picked something because there are so-called conservative, they're conservative. They're not so-called. They're conservative so-called think tanks.
Right.
They say, oh, the way to get this plan adopted is we'll write the laws. We'll actually write every sentence of the laws. And one example is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now, that seems like it'd be a very unbiased national organization. And you would think the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is merely the national organization for all the local chambers of commerce. Big convention once a year in Las Vegas, and everybody parties down. And
not so.
No. It's a conservative so-called think tank that's actually now engaged in writing laws and sending them to the local Republicans in the states across the country that have these massive majorities. And in a way, it's tyranny because they can get anything they want passed if they have the governor and a majority in their House and Senate. So the states aren't really even considering it. That's why they won't even let George Durrani talk in his education committee because the bill's already been, well, it comes from on high. Right. It comes from, you know, the national, and, you know, they must have done their research and they know what's good for Michigan. And this is all BS. This is all stuff that needs to be reviewed. And personally, I've seen the problems, and I think other people here locally, and I'm relatively liberal. I believe federal government has very important roles to play in many areas, essential roles in our society. But for education, we need more local control. Yeah, we need equal funding throughout Michigan. We need equal standards. There's no doubt about that. Probably national standards for education, and that's something that has to be worked on and constantly remodeled year after year after year. But locally, we need to have local input and local concern to our elected officials. You know, otherwise, the state will just control all the schools. And there won't be any. Right now, we don't have any local control because where does our money go? Yeah, we pay local taxes, but it's collected and immediately sent to the state of Michigan. And then if we're lucky, it comes back as they see fit. And it even says here, those schools that succeed the best with online instruction will give them a little extra money. Well, they're playing games there, you know. Of course, I think they should give them extra money up front to get the proven programs in place, have some small test trials of certain classes. Individual classes need to be tested, you know, because each class is different. You're not going to have online the same way for an English class as a science class.
Exactly. That's my point.
And these exact way they're done have to be tested and identified, even with your own student populations. Do these online instruction programs work for someone who doesn't speak English, for example, as a native language?
Sure.
If they don't, they may not be appropriate for Dearborn, you know. And certainly ESL students should be warned about the fact that don't even try these because you're going to fail. The vocabulary level is way above an English as a second language student's capability. And we've made great strides with ESL instruction in Dearborn, and we've needed to. But, you know, I'm just saying I know online instruction, and I've been very close to Vivian Beatty and the program at the college. I was trained here at the college to be an online teacher, and then I retired. I know it across the state from being part of the Michigan Telecommunication Consortium as the president of HFCC's representative for it was about 15 years that I was the key representative from HFCC to this group that set up and managed the first telecourses at the college level for community colleges all across the state.
So then you're a perfect person to ask this. I think there's a higher number than people realize of individuals that either have no computer or technology access or internet access. I think, and we may be talking about, you know, not necessarily the suburbs, but Detroit. From your, in your opinion, because you made a really, really interesting statement a little while ago, you said for those of the people that can actually get a ride to Dearborn. Mm-hmm. So what if you're one of those people, and there's, again, I think there's more than we can imagine, that have no internet access and they don't have a way to a different school district. Are they,
They're in the abyss. They're on the low side of the digital divide.
Exactly. Yes, right. Exactly. And yeah. I think there are more of those peoples than we realize.
We have to equalize opportunities. So if you're really going to do that, Governor Snyder, where's the money and the training for the students in the inner city, the poor students throughout the state? Because they'll need a fast internet connection at their house. They'll need at least an iPad or a wireless iPad. Maybe with a phone connection. If they don't have cable connection, they'll need that phone connection built into their iPad so they can. But then who's going to pay the monthly charge?
And
$50 a month,
right,
for
exactly.
that connection. And who's going to train them in that? You know, I'm amazed that even here at Henry Ford Community College, some of our faculty, and they're very much up to beyond standards for computer instruction. I know my daughter knows computers really well, but most of the teachers in her middle school in Southfield don't know computers very well. It's hard to believe. Most of them can do email, but they don't know what the possibilities are of the internet and instruction. And here, even at Henry Ford Community College, we have courses that we give to the faculty for free on, specifically right now, it's iPad instruction.
Sure.
How to do everything with an iPad as a teacher. And I thought iPads, although I have a tablet, a computer, but it's not an iPad. Sorry, Apple, haven't gotten there yet. I have a Kindle Fire. Okay, I got started with, and it's all I need. I also have an iPhone 5, which I can do everything on the internet. I just got to squint my eyes to the smaller screen, but I can do everything that the iPad can do on my little iPad, little iPhone 5. But nonetheless, and I'm not currently teaching anymore. My daughter has a Mac laptop, of course, so she can handle everything that way. But even here at Henry Ford Community College, we're offering classes to bring all of our faculty up to excellence in terms of managing iPads, and that also would apply to when we introduce iPads into our classes as a requirement. I noticed the Dearborn Public Schools, thanks to a Title I grant, they just got another 120 iPads for elementary school kids. Who's going to train those kids? Who's going to train the teachers in those? My daughter, this is Southfield Public Schools, they got a grant. They got 40 iPads. They're sitting in the principal's office locked up. They don't know what to do with them. They don't have anybody to use them or to teach them. My daughter is begging and pleading. Now they're 2 years old. They're almost out-of-date equipment.
Gosh.
But they haven't even been used because nobody had any money to train any teachers. My daughter said, give me the whole 40 for my class. I will use them, and I'll be the test example. I will train the other teachers, you know.
Won't they do this?
Well, because if she does it, all the other teachers will be jealous.
I don't care.
You know, but they got the money from the federal government, bought the just like in Dearborn, they bought the iPads for them. But in Southfield, it's maybe different in Dearborn, and somebody's going to try to figure out how to use them.
Sure.
You know, and put them in place, and what software to put on them, and what apps to download, and so on. In Southfield, they're sitting locked up. Now, my daughter thinks there's going to be a breakthrough, and she thinks she's got the principal on her side about this, but it's just crazy, you know, the way that these things happen. A true educator would never approach it in these ways, and we can't blame government for this. But we have to blame, I think, the people that administer the schools, and that includes the state of Michigan now, because, by golly, they're the ones putting the money out and saying who gets what and why. So not our local parents. They have to follow whatever the rules are and the amount of money coming from the state, which is not enough, I don't think, in the beginning. So why don't they just put me in charge? You know, I mean, no, I, you know, but...
Even reading that Ralph Nader book again with all those great ideas.
No, I don't want to be in charge. It's a mess because of what the politics are here. So there's a lot of proposals here. One is, of course, and I'm not necessarily against this one, is to change the school year to a round-the-year calendar. I mean, with periods off,
sure,
like 2 weeks in the summer or something. I mean, we're not an agrarian society anymore, where the kids have to go out and raise crops for the family,
right,
you know, or harvest crops. Although, wouldn't it be cool that every summer they would help tend the community farm?
Right.
You know, whether it's Crowley Park or the other parks, that the kids go out and actually do farming.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not in school, make them tend the crops and then sell them to help support the schools. And we have locally grown food, and it had to be managed. By the way, I went to the Going Green Foundation benefit last Sunday, and I think it was pretty successful. No, it was a good turnout for the center, you know, the big auditorium. And Maureen McElrath was, of course, in her stunning black sequin dress, and she said it was made of recycled materials. So
did she? Yeah.
I never heard of recycled sequins before, but maybe she got it at a Salvation Army store or something. She looked great, but you know, the point was, she announced they already have hired from the Going Green Foundation the Crowley Park farm manager,
full-time manager for this, right?
Well, I don't know how full-time. I mean, is it just during the summer, or do you
year-round,
or is it 10 months, or and is it you know 36 hours a week, or is it 60 hours a week,
right?
But the good point is, they have a manager. She was having to manage and raise money at the same time,
and she was the first to admit that this wasn't, like, she was still learning. She was part of that learning curve,
right? Yeah. And you interviewed her on
we did for Impact
show last month. That's the fourth Tuesday. We're still trying to find a topic for this coming Tuesday, but
it'll be great. Always is.
Oh yeah. That's the excitement of radio. It's always something different, at least here at WHFR. So there are some proposals. I'm in favor of year-round education for a variety of reasons. Those buildings are there. Why should they sit vacant? Now, in some districts, like my daughter's, they have no air conditioning. My daughter tells me in Southfield, in her middle school, 2 months, May and June, if it gets hot, it's not just hot, it's like 110 degrees in her classroom. I mean, she's got a thermometer.
Yeah.
It's 110. She has to bring in her own fans,
right,
that blows around 110 degree temperature, and she has to talk over the fans, and it is hell. It is torture. So some of the school buildings, even in Michigan, have no air conditioning, and they're absolutely becoming, thanks to climate change, unlivable in the last 2 months every year. And so that's a problem, and that would cost a sizable chunk of change to get the school buildings ready for year-round instruction. But I think it has to be done. These are community resources and facilities. They can be occupied. They can be good for the community. And we need to do it. If we don't, I say put the kids out to community farms and let them grow crops.
That's right. Now, with the year-round
education,
does that propose more education, or would they just, it would be balanced out, there'd be maybe shorter days, a longer
That's
vacation.
To be decided, yeah.
But there wouldn't be actually more schooling. It would just be what the current requirements would be spread out over a bigger, a longer time period. Is that what you're saying?
No, there could be more schooling.
Because in some countries, mm-hmm, I do know they do this year-round, and it is extremely effective.
Right. Yep.
And then I want to say Japan, but I'm not sure. I thought there was one that they go year-round, but they have like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, mm-hmm, or something, a four-day week.
Well, once the plan is adopted, they have 5 years to implement it. And score, they'll be push and shove and changes over those 5 years. But the big problem is, of course, the funding issue, is that you can take your funding with you and you can use it for online and without any supervision or guidelines or criteria for that. What a danger.
So I could go to a different school every year if I wanted to.
And especially a danger and a problem for, right, and especially a danger, and there has to be a capacity issue, of course, for each district, for the people on the low end of the digital divide.
Absolutely.
You know, that they can't choose online, and they're the ones without the transportation in the first place.
Yeah.
So but this is a major issue, folks, and don't let it sink through the cracks. I've told Dennis, since he's the producer for the show,
we're
both going to try to get George Durrani here after the lame duck session is over. It might be right before Christmas, but it's going to go through at least the first week in December. So it's going to be next week and maybe another week after that.
Right.
But then we want George here to give us a report on how bad things were. I mean, it's obviously not going to go the way that any Democrats want. So, you know, we'll see. And, of course, he's our representative on the Education Committee specifically, what his twist and turn is on this. And we've got to keep informed on this. And we have to, make things happen.
I was just thinking, you had said that we had a couple comments from Hightower. I was just curious what he was talking about. He has something about Black Friday.
Well, Well, the second one is it talks about America's good food movement.
Okay.
And that's been going on for a while, but that's a good trend, especially on right after Thanksgiving Day. Now it's time to think about good food, folks.
That's right.
But he has a comment here about, you know, some of the bosses. We heard this a couple of weeks ago, but he just expresses things so well. You know, the Papa John guy,
mm-hmm.
how he, yeah, here's comments about right after the election, we had some bosses who went berserk.
The sky is falling. The end times are upon us. It's all over for America, and it's all because of you. You, the execrable voters. This is the wretched wail of a few corporate chieftains who claim to be somewhere between flummoxed and furious that Barack Obama is back in the White House with his diabolical Obamacare and tax the rich attacks on us wealthy job creators, they moan. This president is out to destroy American business. There's a tsunami coming, cried one, so we must save ourselves. How do these trembling titans of free enterprise intend to do that? By firing employees, thus sending a message to workers that voting for Democrats is bad for their health. Elections have consequences, exclaimed a Las Vegas boss after offing 22 workers the day after Obama was reelected. Echoing this self-serving political ethic, a Georgia executive told C-SPAN that his fear of Obamacare made him fire enough workers to exempt his business from providing health care. I tried to make sure that the people I had to lay off voted for Obama, he noted, spewing spite. Then there's Papa John's, the billion-dollar-a-year fast food chain. John Schnatter, the present papa of Papa John's, had warned this summer that he'd jack up the consumer price of the chain's pizza if Obama won, because he was not going to eat the cost of assuring health coverage for employees. Post-election, however, Schnatter has decided not to slap his customers, but to slap Papa John's workers instead by cutting their hours to part-time so he doesn't have to pay for their coverage. That's what you do, Schnatter snapped. You pass on costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's what you do, and what an exemplary way for the millionaire boss to boost productivity, loyalty, and morale of those who do the actual work that make customers want to buy Papa John's pizza, or not. What better day than Thanksgiving to celebrate our country's food rebels? I'm talking about the fast-growing movement of small farmers, food artisans, local retailers, co-ops, community organizers, restaurateurs, environmentalists, consumers, and others, perhaps including you. This movement has spread the rich ideas of sustainability, organic, local economies, and the common good from the fringe of our food economy into the mainstream. It began as an upchuck rebellion, ordinary folks rejecting the industrialized, chemicalized, corporatized, and globalized food system. Farmers wanted a more natural connection to the good earth that they were working. Meanwhile, consumers began seeking edibles that were not saturated with pesticides, injected with antibiotics, ripened with chemicals, dosed with artificial flavorings, and otherwise tortured. These two interests began to find each other and to create an alternative way of thinking about food. Today, more than 13,000 organic farmers produce everything from wheat to meat, and organic sales top nearly $27 billion a year. Some 7,000 vibrant farmers markets operate in practically every city and town across the land, linking farmers and food makers directly to consumers in a local supportive economy. Also, restaurants, supermarkets, food wholesalers, and school districts are now buying foodstuffs that are produced sustainably and locally. This shift did not come from corporate or governmental powers. It percolated up from the grassroots, and it's spreading as people inform themselves, organize locally, and assert their own democratic values over those of the corporate structure. This is Jim Hightower saying, family by family, town by town, this good food movement has changed not only the market, but also the culture of food. As you, your family, and friends sit down for a good meal this Thanksgiving, celebrate this change, which is truly worthy of our thanks.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, October the 23rd, 2012. Jay Koronick, Dennis Reimar is here with you in our Henry Ford Community College studio. The college is, of course, closed today, too, for Thanksgiving break. But, of course, we're here for your benefit. Yes, to tell you what's happening. Here's something that I didn't see in the papers, but DearbornPatch.com did pick it up. That's DearbornPatch.com. dispatch.com if you're looking for this yourself. Dearborn protest calls for end to Israeli attacks on Gaza. This was their story from the 18th. Last week of November, protesters gathered Saturday afternoon on Warren Avenue, that's a week ago Saturday, at Oakman Boulevard near the Esper Branch Library in Dearborn to speak out against Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip. Organized by the Dearborn Area Community Members, that's all capital letters, folks, at the start of those words. The protest was put together quickly to publicly call for support from the U.S. federal government in ending the conflict. According to the Washington Post, Israeli missile attacks on Gaza have continued for 4 days. That was on the 18th. They must have started around the 14th. Escalating on Saturday as Hamas political buildings and homes of Hamas leaders were targeted in the airstrikes. As I'm sure Dennis knows, Hamas is the political party that officially was voted in to the leadership of the Palestinian area.
It was also other...
Except the U.S. has always referred to them as a terrorist
exactly.
group.
Exactly. I was trying to figure out how to word that.
Yeah. Right. So the voters voted for a so-called, according to us and Israel, of course, a terrorist group. And there's been problems ongoing, of course. Well, in terms of this story, conversations have continued in the Middle East. Okay, we'll update you on that. Several protesters in Dearborn on Saturday, a week ago Saturday, spoke out specifically against President Barack Obama, who has maintained support for Israel. Well, we know that Obama decided 5-6 days ago, not just because of the protest in Dearborn here, I'm sure, but he actually sent Hillary Clinton over to negotiate a ceasefire. And as I read this here, under intent, this is from the New York Times from, just yesterday, Thursday, November 22nd, the headline story. Under intense Egyptian and American pressure, Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas halted 8 days of bloody conflict on Wednesday, averting an Israeli ground invasion of the Gaza Strip without resolving the underlying disputes. With Israeli forces still massed on the Gaza border, a tentative calm descended after the announcement of the agreement. The United States, Israel, and Hamas all praised Egypt's role in brokering the ceasefire as the antagonists pulled back from violence that had killed more than 150 Palestinians. And so they say here, Egypt's new leader was a crucial link in this Gaza deal. But still, Hillary Clinton was there, and she spent hours in negotiation with all of them, with especially Egypt's new Islamic president, Mohamed Morsi. So he's the one that is considered the main broker. But she conferred for hours with Morsi and the United Nations Secretary General, whose name is Ban Ki-moon. Hmm. At the presidential palace in Egypt, says neither side retreated from threats to resume the conflict if the deal fell through, and both said they had only reluctantly agreed under international pressure. Well, thank God for international pressure.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
We need to stop the killing. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're approaching a holiday season, peace and love, and, you know, all the time here, the worst thing about human beings, we kill each other, okay, as a species, okay? Almost no other species, for no particular reasons or selfish or greedy or individualistic reasons, kill each other. All right, it's the worst thing of being a human being. I'm most upset over that. Speaking from my own species, mm-hmm. and they call us Homo sapiens, as if we had any knowledge about what we're doing. Really, let's have the big view here. Always quote Arthur J. Goldberg, who was our U.S. ambassador to the U.N. back in the 60s. Extremely gifted man, but he said this great statement, the only way to stop fighting is to stop fighting. That's right. It doesn't really matter who's right or who's wrong. Let's stop the killing. Let's stop the killing right now. Hamas, stop sending those rockets into Israel. Israel, stop responding 10 times over. You know, massive retaliation has been, if I may talk directly to Israel, I'm sure they're listening to the show on the internet, of course.
Has to be on the stream.
Yeah. Massive retaliation hasn't worked. That hasn't been a good threat. It only makes the Palestinians and other Arabs, for that matter, in the area angry at you as a horrible butcher, oppressor. And, of course, you are an occupier of the Gaza Strip, which supposedly was going to be the future Palestinian state. And you've never let them have real independence. And you have your troops there. And you're kidding, killing and harassing people constantly. Well, you know, that massive retaliation, you know, you heard us, we'll strike back 10 times over. It hasn't worked, has it? It hasn't worked. You know, and here's Amy Goodman. I have this report from the Daily Progressive Populist, which is an email newsletter of opinions from smart people. Amy Goodman is, of course, host of Democracy Now! It's not currently carried in Detroit. It's a daily news program, our news program. You can listen to it on the internet from democracynow.org. And her opinion is, in Gaza, it's the occupation, stupid. So bear with me here. Her opinion is worth it if you haven't heard this before. The Palestinian people want to be free of the occupation. That was a quote from award-winning Israeli journalist Gideon Levy, summed up this week. It's that simple. Okay, that's the Israeli who said the Palestinian people want to be free of the occupation. This latest Israeli military assault on the people of Gaza is not an isolated event, but part of a 45-year occupation, this is Amy Goodman talking, of the sliver of land waged between Israel and the Mediterranean Sea, where 1.6 million people live under a brutal Israeli blockade that denies them most of the basic necessities of life. Without the unwavering bipartisan support of the United States for the Israeli military, by the way, we're giving them $40 billion a year in foreign aid. That's without us, without the U.S. aid, and that's more aid we're giving to Israel than any other country in the world, okay? They would crumble. They would fall, okay, without that extra support. Unbelievable. Anyway, going on here, this occupation of Palestine could not exist without that aid, certainly. At the time of this writing, and Amy wrote this yesterday, the 22nd, maybe a few hours before that, and this is before it was said before the truce was declared, however. But I've got bad news for you, folks. Just this morning, they're killing again on both sides. Okay, so is there still a truce? I don't know. There's like a half dozen people were just killed back and forth, Israeli people and Hamas, and the missiles are starting to fly again. So what do we have? One day of peace. So it's starting all over again. So Mr. President Morsi of Egypt, you got a job to
get
do here for
there.
Us. And Hillary, I don't think you better come home yet.
No. Change your tickets.
This is unbelievable. But who has to stop fighting? Well, both sides have to stop fighting and then agree to sit down and negotiate a settlement. And of course, after 45 years, nobody has good feelings on either side about the intentions of either side. We've had U.S. presidents, Jimmy Carter and others, that have tried to broker agreements. Those haven't held. Somebody's got to do something. Now, it seems to me, in my humble opinion, $40 billion has a lot of power associated with it. I think we can pretty well threaten Israel to do just about anything we want to. They won't like it. They won't like it as a country, but if there's a fair agreement to stop killing on both sides, you know, I think it'll help them. And a lot of Israelis in the U.S. and over there are starting to agree with that opinion right now. And if we have to, we say, okay, hey, guess what? Next year, you're not going to get $40 billion. You're only going to get $10 billion. How would you like them apples? And see what you can do. And they would be destroyed. And we don't want that, you know, but they would be reduced to having to find a settlement, I think. I mean, we do have that power to make peace by just not funding the brutality. Now, I don't think we should take that money away from Israel until we get a good agreement from Hamas, too. But I think we can phase in something here. And I don't know why. I know Israel. The support of the American Jews in the political system, for our political system, has always been important. And for some reason, Republicans got on their high horse, too, about, ooh, they support, like, the Holy Land. Of course, they're Jewish, but Christians, Jews, well, what the heck. Christ was a Jew, wasn't he? Okay, no, he changed. All right, but anyway, he became a Christian before he died. Well, I'm just kidding here. Just kidding. Everybody's got to have religious sense of humor, right? Okay. But this is crazy in this little part of the world. And, you know, to speak of some Christians in here, and I'm just talking about the extent of opinion here. There are some Christians that actually want to see a war start there because they believe it'll bring about, as told in Revelation, the apocalypse, the rapture, which will save them, and a terrible war and destruction worldwide, and the four horsemen and all that mythology. And then, thank you, the second coming. And Jesus will return, and we'll all be good again. At least those Christians will be good anyway.
Yeah.
The others, well, the heck with them. Well, first of all, it's not a very Christian spirit to hope for a second coming. First of all the death and destruction, even of heathens, I don't think that's very Christian. I don't think historical Jesus would have liked the idea of somebody that didn't believe in him being killed nonetheless. I thought that was thou shalt not kill was even in the Old Testament. Wasn't that there, you know, the, Moses on the mountain, all that? give me a break. I mean, anybody can point out contradictions, but I'm saying none of us, whether you're hoping for the second coming or you're Christian or you're Jewish, nobody should want a war there. Nobody should want killing to happen anywhere.
But no, but back to your statement about the money, that is an ideal way. That is ideal leverage.
But politically, you'd be attacked in this country as being against American interest, whatever they are.
Yeah.
You know, the Arabs will take over all the Middle East. Will they? Okay. I think they live there too. Why can't we broker an agreement in which all sides will respect each other?
But
why can't we do that?
I don't think it would ever come to that. I believe the money would still go there under the conditions. That's what I'm saying. Is I don't think it would be cut back. I wouldn't.
Well,
they would go because we're not going to be unreasonable. I just wonder how much of Israel's money goes to their defense.
I think Israel would be afraid of payback after 45 years of being this brutal dictator and occupier. It's true. They got attacks. They got some of their people killed over these 45 years. But I would think some people in Hamas or other Palestinian groups would want to continue with payback for the Israelis. If they weren't well-equipped and well-armed and they were under a sort of a peace agreement, they would still try to kill Israelis. But then those individuals should be hunted down by everybody and eliminated. You know, everybody, including Palestinians at that point. So, sure, there's going to be some payback if Israel stops their massive retaliation. But we've got to take these steps forward, okay? This is not helping anybody. And we can't let this get out of control, obviously, in the Middle East. And that's why Egypt is concerned, you know. And Syria is having their own internal war, so they're not really too bothered. But that's bad. That's another bad situation.
Right.
But
I like all of the conspiracies, especially.
Yeah. This matters, folks. I know it's a holiday season, but this is an international issue. We have a lot of people from the Middle East who are immigrants and related to people who are still living in the Middle East here in Dearborn. And by golly, we have to let our opinions known, and we want peace in the Middle East. I'm all in favor of whoever the group is. They say it was put together quickly. The Dearborn Area Community Members. That's name doesn't really say much. Sounds like it represents everybody, but it's capital DACM.
The DACM.
DACM.
That's right.
This was only one protest, and I see only about a dozen people in the picture taken here. But as was stated, Obama sent Hillary Clinton because of this sort of national concern that had been expressed and got some press also. So all of it helps for a good purpose, not for war, for peace. And those people don't deserve to go through this. I follow, as you know, Dennis, the Michigan Peace Team, who train people in nonviolence here in Michigan and then send them around the world. And the number one place they've had to send them to try to bring about peace is these Middle East areas, including the Gaza Strip.
Exactly.
And they've had several of their people arrested, beaten. I mean, the last one was a woman who was 60-plus years of age from Michigan who was beaten by Israeli troops and soldiers for no good reason. I mean, I got the whole story here somewhere.
Right.
Had to be taken to a hospital, and I think she's been sent back to Michigan now. But, they're identified as peaceful protesters, you know, and trying to keep conflict from happening, and they're trained not to start a fight themselves at all. And they wear special vests and identifiers, but that doesn't matter. Israeli troops, you cross that line, we'll beat you to a pulp
with the
butt of our rifle. And that's what they did to this woman. So maybe we can talk to some of those people.
We are actively trying to get people. It probably won't be that woman, but we are trying to get people that that have ties to the organization.
Yeah, why? And I'm sure our listeners are like, why do they feel so strongly to do that? They live here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Sure, nonviolence is a great goal everywhere, but why do they need to go there, the Gaza Strip? And I think the full story has to be told. And I don't want to make it, and I don't want you to get the idea, folks, that I'm anti-Israeli or anti-Zionist. I don't have those feelings whatsoever. I just know the Israelis, from the research I've done, has a large portion of the blame, and certainly their massive retaliation strategy has not helped. It's inflamed the conflict and continued it over the years, and so they're wrong in that regard. Is it right to accept Hamas's missiles to blow up and kill Israelis?
Of course not.
I think last year there were 700 to 800 missile strikes from Hamas, and Israel now has a high-tech, what's it called? Shield of steel or something that we paid for and introduced. It's a missile, anti-missile shield, if you will. It's not an actual shield, but and they've stopped hundreds of those missiles from actually reaching the ground because of the anti-missile system that we put in place for them.
But now Hamas is bragging that they can hit Tel Aviv, one of the most populated cities in the world.
Yeah, still some of the missiles get through.
Sure.
So, and who's providing those missiles? Well,
we don't want to brag. But.
Well, okay, it took a lot of time, but it's very important, and we need to be concerned about these horrors in the world, folks, so that we can work out ways and influence our politicians like President Obama to move forward on these issues. Maybe we should end on some positive notes. Dennis, we wanted to mention, just local and fun stuff. First of all, Festival of Trees at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center here in Dearborn continues through Sunday. It's a great thing for the family, and it's only $5 admission, and all the money goes to Children's Hospital of Michigan.
That's $5 for adults. I think it's only $3 for kids. So
oh, well,
the whole
there
family.
You go. Yeah, and there's a lot of interactive stuff for the kids to do.
Yep.
And I can't remember. Santa's there, too, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah,
he's everywhere.
But. Hey, we drove through Heinz Drive the other day. I don't know. When's the last time you went through Heinz? Been a while.
A couple years ago, my daughter, but all the lights on. Yeah,
they're getting everything ready now.
Yeah,
but it looks cool.
And the profits from that go to keeping our parks.
Yep.
Up.
That's full. That I think specifically Wayne County. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
What else?
Today is Buy Nothing Day, but that probably didn't work out well. Internationally, this is an organization called Adbusters Media Foundation out of Vancouver. It started this holiday, a couple dozen years ago, and the word is spread internationally. The date internationally is always a Saturday, so it's tomorrow, November 24th, is Buy Nothing Day. Unfortunately, that conflicts with a U.S. Pseudo-holiday called Shop Small Day. And that has been started, and it's certainly noble. And that is tomorrow, if you're shopping, consider shopping not at chain stores, because you got enough chains anyway, right?
Yeah, don't need more chains.
It can only lock so many people up at a time.
That's right.
They get rusty and so on. There's maintenance.
The people are the chains.
Right. That too. Shop at a business that's not part of a mall, maybe, or not part of a franchised operation. They have unique things, usually locally made and high quality, and they give you personal customer support and attention, and highly recommend that. So whatever you want to do there. So they've extended Buy Nothing Day to a Buy Nothing Christmas concern. Hey, all you dreamers, redeemers, and spiritual wildcats out there, until we challenge the entrenched values of capitalism, that the economy must always keep growing, that the consumer must always be satisfied, that immediate gratification is imperative, we're not going to be able to fix the gigantic psycho-financial eco-crisis of our time. That's according to Adbusters Media Foundation. They say the collective journey towards a sane, sustainable future, there's that word sustainable, don't we love that? Begins on a deeply personal and individual level with a single voluntary step. Make a vow to yourself to participate in Buy Nothing Day this year. And maybe Buy Nothing Christmas. What the heck? In fact, my granddaughter, very proud of this, my granddaughter said to my, my granddaughter is only approaching 5. My granddaughter told my mom, and my mom said, what do you want for Christmas? And trying to get some ideas. And she said, Mom, just make me something for Christmas.
Wow.
I think that's because in her day school, that's what the teachers do. They have them do arts and crafts, but it's always like presents for the parents, which keeps them paying tuition to the daycare center.
Right.
You know, they get
right.
those little presents. So she thinks that doing a craft project or making cookies or something like that to give to other people, that's the best sign of the season. And I hope she never loses that. I'm sure she will. So that's what my daughter's going to do. She's working on little craft projects and big craft projects for everybody in the family this year, as well as my granddaughter. And that's the sort of thing we're talking about. Or shop small, at least. Or maybe you want to give good food. Maybe you buy good food from a store and give people food. You know, people need to eat, so why not give them some good, healthy food? I know candy is attractive, and cakes and cookies, but what about some special vegetarian dishes just for something different? Or fruits,
Have you ever been a fan of fruitcakes?
You know, well, everybody has their particulars. You know, some people don't like the extra brandy. Some people want more brandy.
I don't like
pineapple in my fruitcake.
It's hard to find them without.
I don't like pineapple on my pizza either, by the way.
Okay.
But I'm just weird like that. But I think fruitcakes are a great way to proceed. They can have a lot of healthy things in
sure.
them. Watch out for those maraschino cherries, folks. I understand that the food dye will kill you, or at least it's not necessarily healthy. But it is sugary, and if it's made with white flour, that may not be good. A lot of doctors think it should be whole grain stuff. But do what you think is appropriate. But buying as little as possible. But buying things that are maybe more symbolic and more personable, you know, that might make the difference. So take the next step for generations, as they recommend from Adbusters. And that sustainable word is there too, so you can't be against that.
Nope.
Any other farewell thoughts, Dennis? We're coming to the top of the hour. This is Dearborn. Dearborn's own WHFR.FM.
You gave me this. This is wonderful. Consumer Reports put this out. Just a really quick true or false.
Yep.
True or false, most people gain several pounds over the holidays. That is false. They said there's absolutely no
wow.
evidence to support this. My family
They haven't
disagree.
Looked at my scale.
Exactly. Just really quick here. To avoid holiday temptation at events, you should eat a meal before you go. False. Why would you do that? Because then you'll just eat more when you get there. And then this okay. is one kind of sad. You're more likely to die of a heart attack on Christmas or New Year's than any other day of the year. And that is true. A study confirmed that this grim statistic is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But so...
Yeah, so I think people are so stressed out with all the shopping
exactly.
the day before and getting ready that they're overtaxed.
Well, plus the car accidents, and this is the time that people overindulge.
Right. Well, as I said, all kinds of stressful and new things going on. And by the way, Mondays are not good either for heart attacks.
Well, you know what they say is that people... I just read this through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is really interesting. The reason why... The holidays are so significant for heart attacks is because people are with family and friends, and they tend to put off getting it checked out when they have symptoms. Therefore,
oh, that's
it's
right.
too late.
Yeah, they delay because they're delaying their own health issues.
Because they're with family right. and tradition and stuff, and they overlook it.
Uh-huh,
wow,
yeah.
interesting.
Well, we want you to come back again next Friday, and so definitely don't. I hope you're not stressed out.
That's right.
And take care of yourself. Your health is the most important thing, and try to share everything that's good with others. That's what the season is about. Try to